Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is Preview Spotlight number 90 for the April 2015 previews. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items and previews you might find interesting, and the way we figured that out is, well, people send in clips, people like you. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and that's really what makes these work. I could go on and on about the comics I love, and well, that's great, and I will, but really, I want to hear what you guys enjoy, because that way we get a wider selection of comics and stuff like that, and this is a great way to support the comics, the publishers, and the creators and the characters you love. Now, there are thousands of items in previews each and every month. It's easy for things to get lost. Believe me, I often, send an email to DCBS saying, I forgot to order this last month. Can you add it? And I keep track of what's in there. It's just there's so much stuff. Now, as always, we're going to be starting at the beginning of previews, working our way to the back. We're not going to go item by item, page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights. And again, highlights picked out by people like you. We had a ton of submissions this month. I'm very happy about that. So let's get to it.
Hey guys, it's Chris Brawlinator Brawley. I'm back with my first pick from this month's previews. It's found on page 40 in the Dark Horse section. It's Black Hammer number 1. I remember reading about this sometime last summer, and it was supposed to debut in March of this year. I've read some reports that it was due out in late 2014. So I'm not sure what may have delayed this launch, but I expect it will be worth the wait. Jeff Lemire and artist Dean Ormston's new Dark Horse Comics creator-owned series, The Black Hammer, is a character-driven series following five of the greatest heroes of a lost era as they find themselves trapped in a mysterious town that they're unable to leave following a cosmic battle known only as The Event. This series picks up 10 years after these five written-out-of-continuity heroes arrive at Blackhammer Farm, and what follows promises to contain Lemire's knack for deconstruction and exploration of the modern superhero storytelling technique and superhero comics as a whole. Now, although this series might be new, Lemire conceived of the concept back in 2007, which was well before his run at DC Comics. However, with his DC exclusivity at an end, Lemire is now finally ready to jump into the Black Hammer, and there's plenty of potential to see some of the writer's insights on the genre. Well, the basic concept of the book is there are six superheroes who, for reasons they don't fully understand, wake up one day after this catastrophic event in their superhero universe, and they wake up on this farm called Black Hammer Farm in a small town. They don't know why they're there. They don't know what this place is. All they know is they can't leave. And they've immersed themselves in small town life over the last decade and have done what they can to survive and build a life for themselves, becoming this bizarre surrogate family living on a farm together, and they're all superheroes from various parts of comic book history. Two of the characters are from the Golden Age of comics, a few from the Silver Age, and some that are more modern or bronzy superhero characters. They each come from a different point in comics history and a different point in the history of their superhero universes. Black Hammer is, like I said, a creator-owned ongoing series from Dark Horse. Jeff Lemire, you know him from Sweet Tooth, Trillium, Animal Man, drawn by Dean Ormston from the Books of Magic. Black Hammer will be a monthly ongoing series, and I'm very much intrigued by this. I'm not currently following a lot from Dark Horse Comics, and I know that they put out quality work. Most of their material just doesn't appeal to me often, but this definitely intrigues me, and I like Jeff Lemire, so check it out with me. It's Black Hammer. You can find out more and see some of the preview pages on page 40 in this month's previews.
This is Derek with the Comics Alternative Podcast, and I'm glad to be back on John's preview show. And my first pick from the April previews catalog is in the Dark Horse section. You can find this on page 52. It is Nanjing, The Burning City. This is a hardcover graphic novel written and illustrated by Ethan Young. After the bombs fell, the Imperial Japanese Army seized the Chinese capital of Nanjing. Now screams echoes off the rubble as two abandoned Chinese soldiers, trapped and desperately outnumbered inside the walled city, try to escape. What they'll encounter will haunt them, but in the face of horror, they'll learn that resistance and bravery cannot be destroyed. Now, this is by the creator of the book Tales, which came out from Hermes Press in 2012, and although I'm aware of that book, I've not yet read it, but the art that they have on page 52 is impressive. And also, Ethan Young won the 2007 Independent Publisher Book Award for the Best Graphic Novel for Tales. So apparently this had a life before Hermes Press. In the solicit, it says that if you are fans of Mouse, Persepolis, and Boxers and Saints, then you'll like Nanjing. So that's really setting a high expectation for this book, really raising the bar there. But from the looks of it, it seems that Ethan Young can make this. I'm definitely going to check out Nanjing, The Burning City, and you can find out more about it with sample art and the cover, which looks intriguing, on page 52 of the April catalog.
Hey guys, TJ here with another month of previews, and my first selection is in the Dark Horse section on page 58. It is Veda Assembly Required trade paperback with writing by Samuel Tier and art by Hayando Park. This is in the tradition of the Jungle Book and the Graveyard Book, and it says perfect for all ages. So the description is, beneath a factory floor lives an orphan girl named Veda. Watched over by the Diligent Assembly, a robot that works the production line, Veda discovers a unique power. She can speak to machines. Under the tutelage of Assembly, she learns the three laws of machines, but it's the unspoken secret fourth law, avoid the gremlin, that piques young Veda's interest and leads her down a dangerous and compromising path on a journey of self-discovery. So I think one of the things that we struggle with in comics constantly is the lack of all-ages material or the lack of material that's suitable for younger readers. I think the economics of how selling comics works means that as the customer base is aged, that's where they kind of target the material to. So it's really nice to see stuff that's targeted at younger readers, and so that's why I wanted to highlight Veda in the Dark Horse section, was because, you know, anything that we can have as a entry point for younger readers for comics, I think, is a great thing. So this looks pretty good. They have the art on the preview page, and it looks like a great all-ages comic with some interesting robotics issues and kind of a little bit of science fiction. So if you're interested in checking out a cool adventure story, check out Veda Assembly Required on page 58 of the Dark Horse section.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, and I'm a fan of this podcast. And this month, I'm looking forward to a comic book called Mulan Revelations. It's from Dark Horse Comics. It's on page 60 of the previews catalog. It's an issue number 1 of 4. It's a nice little mini-series. It's written by Mark Andreyko, with art by Mika Kanishiro. Does the art and cover. And the short solicit is as follows. Though the future boasts endless technological wonders, only a few can afford access to them. As a new virus rages through the rich and the poor, threatening all of humanity, a warrior is awakened to stop the evil puppeteers behind it all. Centuries after her ancestor and namesake fought for China, a new Mulan has been chosen by the ancient Chinese immortals in a final battle for the world. It's described as a Shanghai cyberpunk. What really drew me to this, or caught my eye in the previews catalog, was the one page of sample art. Looks like sort of a painted style of artwork from Mika Kanishiro, and I really enjoy the cover. This has a really cool look, has the white background and the dark foreground characters. And yes, it's the same, or influenced by the same Mulan as the Disney character, which is obviously based on a Chinese folktale. And I am a little bit familiar with Mark Andreyko. He has done a little bit for DC and whatnot, doing Batwoman, Manhunters. And I've seen a little bit of artwork from Micah's. He's done some work like Blackout for Dark Horse. Also just really love sci-fi tales like this one, set in the future with a little bit of, you know, political and, you know, intrigue and whatnot. Once again, this comic is called Mulan Revelations. And it's going to be coming out on June 24th. It's $3.99 with 32 pages. And I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, John.
Guys, my next selection is on page 73 of the Dark Horse section, and this is in celebration of Manga Month. And this is the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service Omnibus Edition Book 1 trade paperback, with writing by Eiji Otsuka and art by Hoshi Yamazaki. And this is kind of described as a horror comedy. And this collects the first three volumes of the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, which was kind of like a cult classic manga that was pretty popular in the last probably 5 to 10 years. And I know that Dark Horse has also kind of been committed to bringing out the latter part of the series. I think they solicited volume 13 or 14 in a previews or two ago. And the description is as follows. Five spiritualist students at a Buddhist college in Japan realize the job market is tough these days, among the living, that is. But the dead need jobs done too, so the five form the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, carrying out the last wishes of their cadaverous clients so their souls can move on. But the Kurosagi gang are magnets for weirdness, not just corpses, and every case gets them involved in disturbing personal obsessions, bizarre modern Tokyo fads, and strange rituals of old Japan. And I think that a real good way to describe this is the horror comedy. I mean, dealing with bodies and things like that obviously can be pretty gruesome, but I think there's a lot of comedy in this series, and it really, really entertaining. I really like it. And I've had a really good experience with the manga omnibuses. I've been collecting the omnibuses from Dark Horse for Lone Wolf and Cub, and they're just great reading. You know, you get almost 700 pages of material for $20 before discount, so you're looking at like $11 for 700 pages through DCBS, and it's just a great deal. A lot of good story, and looks like Dark Horse is committed to put these out, so we should see these every few months. And if you're interested in some good manga, some comedy horror, check out the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service on page 73 of the Dark Horse section.
My first clip is on page 90. It is Earth 2 Society Number 1 from DC. This is one of the many new titles coming out after Convergence. And with this, we've got survivors of Earth 2's war with Apocalypse finding themselves on a new world. I don't know if that's going to be the main New 52 world or not. I'm kind of expecting it to be, but who knows? It could be something else. But we've got Green Lantern, Power Girl, a new Batman, and some other heroes that look like include Flash, Hawk Girl, and Power Girl and Green Lantern were mentioned. But they're trying to find their place in this world, and are their actions going to help or hurt this world? Now, when it says a new Batman, I'm wondering if that means that we're going to see the Dick Grayson of Earth 2 that they've been spotlighting quite a bit taking over the mantle, which would be kind of weird because he's got no real connection with Bruce Wayne in that world. But, you know, who knows? Looks like a lot of fun. It's a $2.99 comic book. It's written by Daniel Wilson. I don't really recognize that name. Art and cover by Jorge Jimenez, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name. The art we see here on the cover looks really good, but I think they're showing the Paolo Sicchieria. Again, apologize if I'm mispronouncing that name. But they're showing the variant cover here, not the one by the artist, which I'm frankly don't really approve of. I'd much rather see what the regular artist is going to do. And hey, he's the regular artist. Showcase his work just on the cover and stuff like that. So we'll see how this looks. Again, I'm a longtime fan of the Justice Society. One of the first comics I read, starting with the first issue from DC, was All-Star Squadron. Now, keep in mind, back in the late 70s, early 80s, there weren't a lot of new number ones to go follow at that point. You know, there was New Teen Titans, there, which somehow I missed and had to get as a back issue, All-Star Squadron, and just a handful of others. So I'm a longtime fan of these characters on Earth 2, and even this modern version of the old characters. And I'm curious to see what goes on with that. So, once again, this is Earth 2 Society Number 1 from DC Comics on page 90. Check it out.
Kyle and Drew here with Comics for Fun and Profit, and we are in your DC portion of your previews, and we're on page 98. We're looking at Red Hood Arsenal Number 1. This is a new book coming out of Convergence, a new relaunch, what was formerly Red Hood and, what was it before this? Red Hood
Outlaws.
And Outlaws. Outlaws. Batman and the Outsiders.
Yeah.
Red Hood and the Outlaws, we have Lost Starfire, we simply have Arsenal and Red Hood. We have Scott Lobdell continuing to write it. We've got art by Dennis Midgley. Drew, I don't think you probably thought this one should have been a reboot and a continuation.
Well, they just peeled off Starfire and gave her her own book, and I guess I guess she can't be in this book and have her own book.
Too much continuity to go around, I'm not
sure. Yeah, probably be too much to try to keep straight in the new DC. So, you know, that's cool. It will probably work a lot better as a duo than it did with the three of them anyway, because those storylines kind of got kind of convoluted. So I'm going to check it out and see how the book works, but I'm not really that high on it because it's still the same creator, and those books weren't really not working for me that well. So I hope it's a little better, but I don't know.
Here's where I like this. Here's where I'm excited for the new format and the new number one. I like it better when it's less people. You know, I like the two of them, hopefully being able to do some capers. They both have a very similar sentiment with the way they do things. Red Hood, of course, has no problem, you know, shooting first and asking questions later. So I'm hoping this gets back to a little bit more of the one-off capers that we like so much with them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when they were curtailed with Starfire, they just ended up in outer space for 6 to 8 issues at a time. And I'm glad that does not appear to be an option anymore. So I love what they did with Red Hood on the reboot, the New 52. So I'm glad he's continuing on, and they're getting closer to him being just a single solitary character. So I'm excited to see what this book holds when it comes out, and I'm excited that it's staying at $2.99.
Yeah, it's only $2.99. That's great. So yeah, it's worth checking out. It's number one.
So Comics for Fun and Profit says pick up Red Hood Arsenal number one from DC Comics.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. My first pick for this month's preview spotlight comes from the DC section on page 105, Justice League 41, written by Jeff Johns, art and cover by Jason Feinbach. The critically acclaimed team of Jeff Johns and Jason Feinbach presents the much-anticipated extra-sized first chapter of Dark Side War. When the Justice League investigates a series of unexplained murders on Earth, it leads them to the front lines of a war unlike any the DC Universe has ever seen. A battle between the two most powerful villains in existence, Darkseid and the Anti-Monitor. Meet Darkseid's daughter, a mysterious force of evil with a bizarre connection to the Justice League. Plus, the horrible secret of Superwoman's baby. The ultimate temptation of Batman, Lex Luthor versus Superman, no holds bar. New villains, new allies, and so much more in the DC event that has been building since Justice League number one. Now, in past previous Spotlight episodes, I've been recommending the Justice League book. And, you know, it's like, again, I'm just repeating myself, basically, is that, you know, I like what Jeff John is doing on this book. It's not your regular superhero team book. You know, I like the different twist of him adding Lex Luthor, a villain, to the team. Because what it is that it's like it adds an extra dynamic to the team and also to the book, because Lex Luthor has to be like a hero in the public eye, but yet at the same time he has his ulterior motive for being on the team. And also I like Jason Feinbach's art. He's been the regular artist, and I think for the last 4 or 5 issues. And you know, like I said, I like his art. It's really great. Also, too, you know, this issue number 41, it's a great jumping on point for the series. So, yeah, if you guys get a chance, pick up Justice League number 41. You know, I already have this on my pull list at Dragon's Lair's Comics and Collectibles in Mililani. You know, thank you very much for listening. Back to you, John.
Next up on page 113 is Wonder Woman number 41. Now, this is kind of interesting to me because it's coming out 2 weeks after the Wonder Woman Annual number 1 is coming out, which is solicited on page 112 here. And that annual is the epic finale to the war-torn storyline they've been doing. Now, this issue 41 kicks off a daring new direction, it says. It's like, well, okay, I don't know how daring or what new direction or whatever, but at the very least, we're getting a new costume, so there's that. But this is by Meredith Finch, who's been doing the stuff and is doing that Wonder Woman annual. Art and cover by David Finch. So we've got the same creative team, and I'm curious how they're going to motivate the new costume, how daring and bold this new direction is based on what's already been going on, because their first arc was kind of a bit of a departure from what had gone on in the book before. Not, you know, flying in the face of it, but again, different tone and style, as is going to happen when you bring on a new creative team. So I'm looking forward to it. I've got mixed feelings about the new costume. By and large, it looks really good. The thigh-high boots are a little odd. The spiky things coming out of her gauntlets in place of the bracelets or whatever, I'm not really a fan of. But overall, it looks good. I'm curious why that costume doesn't seem to be getting used over in Justice League, but that's another story. So Wonder Woman is one of the classic DC characters, one of the ones that I think has long since been underrated and ignored for no good reason. She's a fabulous character. This is a good jumping on point. I think it's a good chance for people to really, you know, see if the character and the current take on the character is for them or not. And this is a $3.99 comic. Interestingly, I don't really see mention of a backup story, unless Donna Troy is getting a backup story, or mention of more pages. This is only a 32-page comic. So DC is finally, I think, moving a little away from the holding the line at $2.99, which they have done for many, many years. So it's, frankly, long overdue. I'd like the lower price, but I can't fault them for this. If you get it through DCBS, you should be getting at least a 40% discount for a DC book. I haven't seen the order form yet, so I don't know. I would expect, though, since it's a comic book page pick of the month, we'll get a 50% discount. And, you know, at your local store, well, if you got a pull list, maybe you get a discount, maybe you don't. Don't know. Depends on the store. I'm looking forward to it, seeing how the new costume looks in action, seeing what new direction they do, and seeing where they're going with Donna Troy and stuff. Should be a lot of fun. Once again, that's Wonder Woman number 41 from DC Comics on page 113.
Hey guys, back for my next pick, and it's in DC Comics on page 117. This is Superman number 41, written by Gene Luen Yang and art by John Romita Jr. And why am I excited about Superman number 41? Definitely the writing from Gene Luen Yang. I'm a huge fan of his American-born Chinese, his Boxers and Saints, and his first superhero work that I'm aware of, The Shadow Hero, that just came out earlier this year or late past year. He's just an excellent, excellent writer. I mean, both the first couple of his books were nominated for a National Book Award and were honorable mentions in that award, which is a pretty prestigious literature award. So it's pretty impressive to have comics competing in that arena and being very successful. He usually writes for publishers like First, Second, and so I think it'll be pretty interesting to see him come over to the monthly comic side. He usually does more graphic novel, long form work. So it should be interesting to see how he adapts. But a lot of his work has things to do with, you know, character development in outside of cultures and understanding what it means to be the other. And obviously that, I think, is really relevant when it comes to Superman, being that he's an alien. So I'm just really excited about a new take on Superman. I haven't really been a fan of the last, you know, since the New 52, to be honest with you. I felt that the character's been, I don't know if I'd say mischaracterized, but I just haven't really gelled with the stories. And so I'm interested to see how one of my favorite writers of the last few years takes the character in a new direction. So hopefully Gene Luen Yang has a interesting take on Superman, and I'm looking forward to try it. So if you're interested, check out DC Comics page 117 for Superman 41.
Hey, this is Chris again with my next pick, and this is from the DC Comics section. It is Batman the Yero Kawada Bat Manga Volume 2. Now, I mentioned this one a few months ago when Volume 1 came out, and I've been absolutely thrilled with my first taste of the Bat Manga, and this next volume is a must-have for me. Back during the height of the 60s Batman television show's popularity, a shonen manga magazine in Japan serialized 53 chapters starring the Dark Knight, which were all written by Yero Kawada. And these rare Batman tales were known by relatively few outside of Japan until award-winning designer Chip Kidd's 2008 book, Batmanga, The Secret History of Batman in Japan, was released. Now, if you picked up Volume 1 of this manga set like I did, you wound up getting the first 20 issues. It was an interesting book from another culture and era. And the black and white art and few color pages were also kind of cool. And while they're not the quality of some of the great artists in the 80s onward, they were very crisp, and the panels got across the action very nicely. It takes a little while to get used to reading from right to left, though, which was an interesting experience. I'm looking forward to Volume 2 of this historical Bat manga. I wonder what other copies of DC villains Kawada used, since he seemed to not use DC villains in that first 20 issues, but only original character villains. At least this has been the case so far. This is highly recommended. These are stories with the Adam West Batman in mind, filtered through the lens of a time period of Tezuka and Company. There's sometimes a bit on the silly side, like with the death-defying Mr. Deathman, but it's just a lot of fun. You won't be disappointed. It's on page 121 of the previews catalog in the DC Comics section. Batman, the Year of Kawada Batmanga, Volume 2. I recommend it.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. My next pick for this month's preview spotlight comes from the DC section. In their trade paperback collection section on page 131, America vs. the Justice Society of America trade paperback, written by legendary Roy Thomas, art by, there's multiple artists in this trade paperback, so I'm going to try to pronounce their name correctly, art by Rafael Cayana, Rich Buckler, Jerry Orway, Alfredo Alcada, Howard Bender, and others. The solicit reads, following the events of World War II, Batman accuses the Justice Society of America of collaborating with the Nazis, which leads to congressional investigation that could mean the disgrace for the JSA. This collects America vs. the Justice Society issues 1 to 4. The reason why I'm picking up this trade paperback is basically for nostalgia purposes. You know, I remember reading this miniseries when it first came out. Now, I had to look up on Wikipedia when it came out. And it came out 30 years ago, back in 1985. So I'm a long-time comic book reader. And regarding them, basically for this miniseries, to me, you know, this was a special comic book event back in 1985. And, you know, because I remember, and if I remember correctly, I think this was one of the rare miniseries sold to the direct market at that time. And it was printed on high-quality paper. And also DC had their top writer and top artist, doing this event, back in 1985. Honestly, you know, I don't remember the details of the story. You know, all I remember was the late, Earth 2 Batman had a letter as the cover, stated accusing the JSA of treason. You know, I remember, you know, this was a great solid, story with fantastic art. You know, I look forward to, picking up this trade. And rereading this great JSA story again. You know, so if you guys get a chance, pick up America versus the Justice Society of America trade paperback. You know, and, you know, thank you very much for listening to this clip. You know, as you can hear, you know, I really have a real fondness for this miniseries. So again, thank you for listening. Back to you, John.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and right now I'm in the DC section of the catalog, specifically on page 137, and toward the bottom of the page I'm looking at Will Eisner's The Spirit, a celebration of 75 years, and this is a hardcover. It's retailing for $39.99. Now, DC, over the past decade or more, had been, past tense, putting out a variety of the Spirit archives. Basically, putting everything related to the Spirit that Will Eisner created into print. And these are in 20-some hardbound editions, archive editions. Very beautiful. I have all of them. I'm a big fan of Will Eisner and the Spirit in particular. But these have been out of print for a while. Now, DC also, at one time, had a collection somewhat like this, kind of like a Best of the Spirit collection, and that was in trade paperback. It was a good collection to have if you didn't want the hardback archival editions, and it was also quite affordable. So, for instance, if you wanted to use this in the classroom in teaching a comics course, such as my colleague on the Comics Alternative, Andy Kunkka, would often do, then it's something that you can order for the students. But even that paperback edition has been out of print. So now what DC is doing is they're pulling together another best of or greatest hits, if you will, package, The Spirit, a celebration of 75 years. And I guess this is following in the spirit, so to speak, of what DC has been doing for the past few years with other properties and their 75th anniversary. We've seen this with Superman. We also saw it with Batman. And then this year we're having, you know, the variant cover celebration celebration of the Joker 75th anniversary, not without controversy. But here we have the spirit, something similar going on, the 75 years. This is a hardback. It collects not only some of the original Will Eisner created, written, and illustrated spirit stories, but also some of the spirit comics that were created by others later. For instance, Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, and Jeff Loeb. So you get a wider span of the history of the spirit, and not just only the spirit as created by Will Eisner. So if you're a fan of comics history, if you're a fan of Will Eisner, if you're a fan of the spirit, or if you just like 75-year anniversary collections, then this is for you. Will Eisner's The Spirit, a celebration of 75 years. You'll find the solicit on page 137 of the April catalog.
My next pick is in the Vertigo section on page 142. This is Fables Volume 22 Trade Paperback, which is also Fables number 150, the issue. It's going to be a 160-page final issue for Fables, and they're kind of doubling up the trade paperback as the last issue. Again, it's all, as always, written by Bill Willingham with art by a number of people, most importantly Mark Buckingham, Steve Lola, Andrew Pipoy, Mark Schultz, Gene Ha, Neil Adams, and others. So this is kind of a sadder solicit for me because Fables is probably in my top 10 of ongoing comics right now, and in fact, I've gotten back into comics after a long kind of absence, probably in the last 3 or 4 years. And one of the things that actually made me start picking comics up again was someone handing me the first Fables trade. And the fact that this is kind of the end of an era for Vertigo is also kind of concerning for me because a lot of their more recent series haven't been able to catch on nearly as well as Fables. And it's just a series that I have near and dear to my heart because with 150 issues, you get to learn and grow with these characters, and that's one of the things I always appreciated about Bill Willingham is he never, you know, basically left his characters, hung them out to dry. You know, he definitely put them through the ringer, but he always gave them satisfying conclusions, even if it wasn't always, you know, a happy ending. He always made sure that it was true to the story and true to who the characters were, and I just loved following his Fables characters through the ups and downs, and that's something I'm really going to miss, and it's something I'm actually quite fearful that we won't get at Vertigo much anymore, because I don't think, with the way that the sales are for Vertigo, that you're going to have many 150-issue series. I think the end of Fables and the end of series like Unwritten, which had about 60 issues or so, is just kind of an indication that Vertigo is definitely in a transition period, and it might look very different than what people who have been reading Vertigo for a long time in the next few years. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to highlight the fact that Fables is ending, one of the best series to be published in comics. And if you want to see how it all ends, then page 142 of the Vertigo section is for you. Fables, volume 22. Goodbye, Fables.
Thanks for pointing this one out. I'd been looking for Fables number 150. I had completely sailed past the trade paperback solicit and would have completely missed it. So thank you for pointing this one out to me. I, too, am a big fan of Fables, and I share your concerns about what this may mean for Vertigo going forward, for one of their longer-running series to end. But I'm looking forward to this issue/trade paperback.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, and I'm a fan of this podcast, back with another comic book pick for the April previews catalog, and it's Mickey Mouse issue number 1. It's on page 176 of the previews catalog from IDW with a writer of Andrea Castellan, Bill Walsh, and Jonathan Gray, with the artist Giorgio Carvazzano, Manuel Gonzalez, and you got like 4 different covers. The short solicit is as follows. When Two-Fisted Mickey hunts the Lost Explorer's trail, he isn't counting on help from Jungle Daredevil Eurasia Top, but here she is. It's issue number 1, but down here in the solicit page it says, a big number 1 issue also continues this beloved series legacy numbering at issue 310. There are many comic book series who claim to go 310 issues, but here is Mickey Mouse. Another reason why I am picking this up because I like to read comic books with my kids, and they just love the Disney characters. And these comics, they're, you know, easy to read, but they're not overly simple. There's a lot of humor in them. It's always good to have, you know, a few humor books in your comic book reading collection. You've got also an issue number 2 of Donald Duck, an issue number 3 of Uncle Scrooge. And I think this will be another good one to add to your reading collection. And it's really going to be a good time. Once again, I think these comic books are just great for kids. You can buy them for your kids. You can totally, you know, obviously trust that they're going to be, you know, G-rated, but they won't be boring. There's usually a lot of good fun in them. Once again, this comic book is Mickey Mouse issue number 1. It's $3.99 for 48 pages, and I'm looking forward to getting it. Thanks a lot, John.
Next up on page 180 is Long Distance number 1 of 4 by writer-artist Tom Zoller. Now, personally, I feel that ought to be enough to sell anybody on this book. But, frankly, for some silly reason, it probably isn't. So let me explain why I think it should be. First off, this is Tom Zoller. Okay, you probably don't know who that is since it hasn't sold you already. This is the guy who, among other things, did Love and Capes for many years. That was kind of a Superman, Lois Lane-style relationship book. You know, in the Lois and Clark kind of a vein. And it was a quarterly book. It was really, really well done. It had a nice sense of humor about it. It was, again, about the relationship, not about the fact he's, you know, a Superman-style character. And it was a lot of fun. He tended to give away, out of the quarterly book, 1 out of the 4 issues a year when it hit whatever one was the Free Comic Book Day one. And the amount of story he puts in these books is just phenomenal. I believe what he does is digital first, essentially, in terms of a webcomic. So you've got the top of the page being, you know, one release, followed by the next bottom of the page being a second release. And it's at least Loving Capes was almost a sitcomish kind of a thing. So imagine a Sunday comic strip. You get a little bit of a story, you end on a solid story beat or a joke or whatever. Get that twice per page, you get that for every page. It wound up being one of the early books that had kind of the digital compression aspect really come into play. Plus, it was a really fun book, good relationships, whatever. Now, Long Distance is a 4-issue miniseries, and the basic concept here is Carter and Lee meet and hit it off while they're stranded in an airport with delays or whatever. He lives in Columbus, she lives in Chicago. Can they manage a relationship that's separated by 300 miles of time zone and the entire state of Indiana? So it's, again, a genre he's done really well. Again, the romantic comedy kind of a thing. I assume it's going to be comedic. I could be wrong on that. But take out the superhero stuff, which frankly, you know, while it was well used in the other book, wasn't a critical component. What I love here is, while this is a $4.99 comic, okay, that's a little much, it's also a 48-page comic and is going to be double-sized every issue. Now, I was astounded how much he could pack into a regular-sized comic. I have no idea what approach he's taking on this, but I am willing to bet every one of these 4 issues is going to be well worth reading in and of itself. Tom Zoller is just a master at keeping stories accessible and entertaining and just easy to get into. I don't know if this is going to be monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, or what the scheduling is going to be. But again, typically a quarterly book doesn't work for me. Loving Capes is quarterly, and it was one of the best books I was reading when it was coming out. So I really cannot say enough great stuff about Tom Zoller. He's a phenomenal writer. He's an excellent artist. He's got a great sense of story, of blocking, of just efficiency in storytelling. His art kind of reminds me a little of kind of that Bruce Timm school of animation or whatever. There's a deceptive simplicity to it. There's a lot more going on than one might think just looking at, well, there's not many lines on the page. Doesn't need to be. There's an efficiency to it, and he doesn't slack off on detail on the acting of the characters and the background on anything. He just makes it look so effortless. So I'm really impressed with Tom Zoller as an artist as well. And just, again, as a businessman, as the way he markets his comic, the way he does stuff, this is a guy who, in my mind, is just a superstar in the comic realm, and one that somehow has managed to fly kind of below the radar. I just don't get that. So when I saw that Long Distance was coming out, I'm like, well, what's that? Oh, it's Tom Zoller. Boom. instantly on my list. No ifs, ands, or buts. And it was one of the easiest things to say, this is going to be one of my picks for a preview spotlight. I'm just a huge fan of him and have loved everything of his that I've read. So, once again, that is Long Distance number 1 of 4 from IDW, written and drawn by Tom Zoller. Definitely you should check this one out.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and my next pick is in the IDW section on page 182. And actually, this is another example of that marriage between IDW and Top Shelf that we found out about a month or so ago. This one is Baucus, Omnibus Edition, Volume 1, and it's by Scottish creator Eddie Campbell. Now, the solicit reads thus: Eddie Campbell's Baucus is a true epic spanning a decade of work, over 1,000 pages, and several millennia of alcohol consumption. In Baucus, the visionary behind From Hell and Alec presents his version of, quote, an American-style comic book, unquote, filtered through his own brilliant, whimsical, and wide-ranging sensibility. And by the way, anytime the word whimsical is included, you know you're in for some fun. Right, kids? With a fine blend of action, comedy, suspense, and an ear for a great story, Baucus brings the gods and myths of ancient Greece to modern life as if they'd never left. Now, actually, Baucus began in the late 80s, kind of in the heyday of the black and white comics, when Campbell created this character for the title, Deadface, I believe it was, and then over the years would bring back this character every now and again, and over time, the story just grew and grew, kind of like the autobiographical Alec comics that Campbell did. Now, we have the Alec comics collected in the aforementioned collection Alec, and the subtitle of that is The Years Have Pants. So now, Top Shelf and IDW are doing something with Baucus. So this is going to be one of what I assume will be 2 volumes of an omnibus, and this is actually going to be a good price. For 576 pages, you pay only $39.99, and I'm sure the Discount Comic Book Service will have an even better deal on this. So if you don't know about Eddie Campbell, this may be a great place to start. It's definitely a wonderful example of what IDW and Top Shelf are doing together. And you can find this on page 182 of the previews catalog. That's Baucus, the Omnibus Edition, Volume 1 by Eddie Campbell.
My next pick is on page 186 of the IDW section, and this is the Library of American Comics bringing Bravo for Adventure by Alex Toth to us. It's 100 pages of Alex Toth, and it's an oversized 9.5 inches by 13 inch size, and it's described as Alex Toth's magnum opus, available in book form for the first time. And it basically collects all three of the Jesse Bravo Knockabout Pilot and Reluctant Swashbuckler stories. So I don't have a huge history with Alex Toth. I know that a lot of his work is hard to come by, and it's not likely that it's going to be collected all together. And so this is kind of a great beginning, hopefully, of some of his stuff getting published that we can get our hands on. Again, this is a Library of American Comics production, so I think that, along with the fact that IDW is really responsible when it comes to the older master stuff that they try to reprint, and they have a few pages of the preview art, and it looks as gorgeous as ever, as you would expect for Alex Toth. And I just think that for comics creators, that kind of the legends that, you know, obviously came before my time, to be able to get their work presented in such a really nice format. You know, I love hardcovers, and this oversized hardcover especially looks amazing. I think this is just an example of what IDW does really well. They spent a lot of time and effort trying to get the rights for these kind of books, and I think they should be rewarded for it. So I'm definitely going to pick up Bravo for Adventure by Alex Toth. And if you're interested in seeing one of the comics masters at his finest, check out page 186 in the IDW section. Guys, my next selection is in the Image section on page 202. This is 8 House Arclight number 1, with story by Brandon Graham and art by Marion Churchland. This describes a lady of the Bloodhouse has had her mind trapped in a strange alien root body. She's hiding on the outskirts of her kingdom until she learns that the alien monster pretending to be her has returned. The first issue of a shared fantasy universe. Sharp genderqueer knights, blood magic, music, dancing, and a goose. So what really drew me to this was obviously the description, and I'm a big fan of Brandon Graham's work on Rob Liefeld's Prophet. I think they did a really good job. I think they had about a 12 to 20 issue run where they kind of reinvented the Prophet character and kind of retold some of the mythology and kind of created their own storyline. And I was really blown away by the way that Brandon Graham really developed some interesting ideas in that series. And Marion Churchland's got great art. They have a 3-page preview, as always, in the image section. And that's something I really appreciate about Image is for their new number ones, they do a good job of showing the art, which is a great thing for people that pre-order because sometimes, you know, the description sounds great, but you're not always sure what you're going to get when you open the cover. But I read Marion Churchland before, actually, Brandon Graham. I read her Beast OGN, which was really good. Just really like her line as an artist, and she's just got great composition, and her character work has gotten a lot better over the years. And so this sounds like just another wild ride from Brandon Graham and Marion Churchland. And if you're interested in something a little bit more fantasy-based, I know one of the issues with Image, for me at least, is that a lot of their series recently have been a lot of sci-fi, and I love sci-fi. It's actually my favorite genre, but I like to branch out every now and then, and this looks like it's going to be a little bit different. And also because it's a shared universe, it sounds like there's going to be other creators and other books that kind of tie in. So it'll be real interesting to follow this kind of as it develops. And with these two great creators to start out, I think 8 House Arclight number 1 looks amazing. So if you're interested or want to try something different, check out page 202 of the image section.
Hey, this is Chris Brawlinator Brawley, and my next pick is from Image. It's on page 214 of the previews catalog in the Image section, and it's Astronauts in Trouble number 1. This was the comic book that launched a publisher. Astronauts in Trouble launched the graphic novel publisher AIT Planet Lar, written by one of its founders, Larry Young, and drawn by Charlie Adler, who would go on to do some fun things too. AIT Planet Lar would also publish some of the earliest comics work of Brian Wood, Matt Fraction, nonfiction work by Warren Ellis, and plenty more. But Astronauts in Trouble was always in the publisher's own name. AIT stands for Astronauts in Trouble. That's where the publisher gets its name. And now it has a new publisher, Image Comics. Astronauts in Trouble number 1 by Larry Young and Charlie Adler will be published by Image Comics this June, and I hear that it will reprint the old series in chronological order with new covers by Adler. The series will begin in 1959 and continue through Live from the Moon and One Shot, One Beer, along with True Facts with back matter updated. This comes out in June. It's 32 pages, and it is black and white, and it's only $2.99. And this series is the one that brought The Walking Dead artist Charlie Adler to the attention of Robert Kirkman. The story is, in 1959, the Channel 7 news team covers a routine homicide that leads them to a mysterious rocket base in Peru filled with Russian spies. All in a day's work for the trusted newsmen in America. They couldn't know their day would end up with a hot pilot, a fast ship, cheap beer, and spacesuits. Life from the Moon, Space 1959, and One Shot, One Beer is much less space opera than space rock and roll. 3 books in a shared universe concentrating on the simple thrills of adventure, space travel, and good old-fashioned storytelling. Each book involves a crew from Channel 7 News getting mixed up in some space-related plot, courtesy of bad guys who are easily identifiable and easy to root against. Space 1959 sees the news team take on communists who are racing to put the first man on the moon and are willing to kill to make it happen. This is a bit of history in comics, and it's great to see Image bringing this back to the mainstream. Now, these stories originally appeared in a limited series back in 1999. And were reprinted in trade paperbacks the following year with an omnibus called Master Flight Plan, which was published in 2003, which contains all 3 of these arcs. I think it's interesting that Image has decided to pick this up now, and it probably has a lot to do with British artist Charlie Adler's fame from his work on The Walking Dead and Savage. Check out Astronauts in Trouble with me, as well as John. I think he has a few more words to add. It's found again on page 214 of this month's previews catalog. John?
There's really not much for me to add on this. I've read some other stuff by AIT Planet Lar, but not actually Astronauts in Trouble. I've got many of these as back issues, but I don't have all of them as back issues, so I'm definitely going to be checking this out. And I just love the concept of kind of the 60s era space program being used as a setting and backdrop for, you know, just some good fun stories. So this is one that's been around for a while. I'm curious if this is kind of marking the end of AIT Planet Lar as a publisher. Certainly Image is a great home for this and will introduce this to a whole new audience. So definitely worth checking out. It is a comic book page pick of the month. That gives it an extra discount, bringing it, I think, to a 50% discount through DCBS. So once again, that's Astronauts in Trouble number 1 on page 214 from Image Comics. Check it out.
This is Comics for Fun and Profit. This is Kyle and Drew here with our pick from Image. And you'll find it on page 225. Hey, look, we're back at Sex Criminals, but there's something different. There's two of them offered.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're doing Triple X variant covers by Brian Lee O'Malley, who is famous for Scott Pilgrim. And you know, I love that book, and I love Triple X. No, wait, I don't.
Hey, whoa, whoa,
I don't even know what that means. Hey, what does that mean? Is that Vin Diesel movie? but yeah, it's going to go crazy. With some variant covers, it's only going to do one print run, so this will be cool and scarce, and it might be neat, it might just be horrible, I don't know.
They're going to do this 5 times, and this is the first of 5 times that they're doing these polybagged, not for everybody's eyes, NSFW, if you will. Weird covers by Mike O'Malley. I'm sorry, Brian Lee O'Malley. I don't know why I said Mike O'Malley.
Everybody of a certain age remembers the polybag era, and it was horrible. So let's hope this is just fun little trend and it's over. But anyway, Sex Criminals is really good, and I've come full circle on it. I loved it. I got a little bored with it, and now I love it again. So this is a new story arc, so great time to jump on. Sex Criminals number 11 by Matt Fraction and Crips and Bloods?
It's hard to tell.
Supposed to be Chips Lazarsky, but they have a lot of fun with poor Chip's name in here.
So, Comics for Fun and Profit recommends Sex Criminals number 11. You can get the regular cover for $3.50 or the naughty variant for $4.69 from Image Comics.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. My last pick for this month's preview spotlight comes from the Marvel section. The Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows numbers 1 and 2, written by superstar Dan Slott and art by superstar Adam Kubert. The solicit reads, "The last Spider-Man story. Not even the Amazing Spider-Man is safe from secret wars. In this new Marvel universe, Peter Parker, Mary Jane Watson, and their daughter have to scrape by to make ends meet, but they have each other. Face front, true believers. This is the one you've been asking for." Now, you know, I'm a big Spider-Man fan, you know, and what I'm going to say is I know it's going to sound very strange, but I was very upset when, you know, they wiped out Peter and Mary Jane's marriage in the One More Day storyline. You know, after that, I stopped reading Spider-Man for a while. You know, it wasn't until I heard a Dan Slott interview on, you know, how he was a big Spider-Man fan and the cool things, you know, he was doing on the Superior Spider-Man series that got me back to reading Spider-Man again. You know, I don't know if Peter and Mary Jane's marriage will be restored, you know, after Secret Wars, you know, but I'm looking forward to reading these two issues. So again, if you guys get a chance, pick up Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, issues 1 and 2. You know, thank you very much for listening, you know, and I look forward to hearing everyone's clips. And again, John, thank you very much for letting me be a part of your podcast. Back to you.
Hey, this is Chris again with my next pick, and we're moving into the Marvel supplemental section of previews. And this one's found on page 42. It's called Weird World, and it's issues 1 and 2, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Michael Del Mundo. And this is one of the most exciting aspects of Secret Wars. It's the way that Marvel is peppering this mega event with some truly strange and surprising series. Weird World was a very obscure Bronze Age high fantasy concept from Marvel that's all but forgotten now. They did just put out an omnibus of it, but I think that's probably not related at all to this miniseries. Jason Aaron turns his creative attention to the return of an obscure Avengers foe, Archon. Joining Aaron is artist Michael Del Mundo, as the two creators have promised to bring high fantasy and the old-school heavy metal manner to the Marvel Universe. Now, according to an interview I read from Jason Aaron, this is not a continuation of the original Weird World series, which were kind of the Marvel version of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. It boasted some exquisite artwork by Mike Ploog and John Buscema. However, there are fantasy elements in this new Weird World series. There are barbarians with swords and dark sorcerers and dragons. Compare this to a mashup of all your favorite weird genre comics and all the best of the 70s. And with artwork by Michael Del Mundo, I think this book is going to be beautiful. I remember reading one of my first Avengers comics as a wee lad. It was issue 75 or 76. I think it's both issues. And it was just a reader copy I'd been given by one of my older cousins, but I loved it. And this was basically Conan meets the Avengers in a good way. The Archon character is definitely a character worth revisiting. So this Weird World will bring back the Warrior King on a quest for a new kingdom, or better yet, trying to find his way home. Jason Aaron said that readers should expect lots of the weirder and more arcane bits of Marvel history mixed into one big crazy stew with all kinds of characters from many different books. I suspect Weird World is where the lost things go, and it may be a place unlike anything we've seen in the Marvel Universe before. Check it out with me. It's on page 42 of the Marvel Previews catalog, Weird World 1 and 2.
Next up on page 44 of the Marvel Previews is Squadron Sinister number 1. This is, obviously, from Marvel. It's part of the War Zones section of Secret Wars. And for those who don't know, the Squadron Supreme is essentially Marvel's version of the Justice League. They're based on the Squadron Sinister, which is an evil version of the Justice League. So, arguably, you could say this is based on the Crime Syndicate, I guess. And I'm a big fan of the Crime Syndicate. I'm a big fan of the Squadron Supreme. I think the Mark Ruemald story they did back in the 80s was just brilliant. And again, the evil version is what first showed up back in the Avengers back in the day that led to all of that. And we get a couple of pages of art on page 44 here. It's by Carlos Pacheco. Hard to go wrong with art by him. Mark Guggenheim's doing the writing. And I just like seeing classic characters, in this case, the Justice League, in a whole new light, a whole different twist, and a different version of them, so they've got the freedom to do stuff they just couldn't do otherwise. And in this, they're clearly villains. This is the evil version of the Squadron Supreme. And they've got one of those realms in this battle world. And is that going to be enough for them, or do they want the whole battle world? Don't know. Definitely looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. This is a $3.99 comic. It is a comic book page pick of the month. So we've got a discount at DCBS of 50%, dropping that price to $1.99. And if you are shopping through DCBS, I've actually just gotten the order form for DCBS. Definitely check out the Marvel Secret Wars bundle they've got. This is one of those things that if you're getting the majority of the contents in one of these bundles, you can get stuff, in this case, for 50% off versus the normal 40% for a Marvel book through DCBS. Now, if you're only getting one or two things, it may not be worth doing. If you're like me and you're more or less all in, or all in the particular area that the bundle is for, these things are really worth checking out. It can save you a couple of bucks, you know, on your order form, which is always nice. And I love how DCBS does these kinds of bundles around, you know, events, first issues, kids' books, or other themes or whatever. So that's something that's always worth looking through the DCBS order form, filtering it to just the items in column D that are in red, because those are their special discounts. That's also where you would find, among other things, the stuff that's comic book page picks of the month, but obviously the bundles and stuff that other podcasts are recommending as well. So once again, I'm really jazzed about Squadron Sinister number 1 from Marvel. I think it's well worth checking out on page 44 of the Marvel Previews. Next up on page 52 of the Marvel Previews is Future Imperfect number 1. Well, and number 2, they've got that listed too. But I'm talking about number 1 here. Now, Future Imperfect is the alternate future, possible future, or maybe actual future, of the Marvel Universe. in which the Hulk has become the Maestro and is pretty much evil and pretty much taken over the world and defeated pretty much every other powered person. And he's got the trophy room to prove it. Now, this was originally done as a two-part prestige series by Peter David and George Perez. It was just some great stuff. This Future Imperfect series presumably is ongoing-ish, or at least for the duration of Secret Wars. Written by Peter David, art by Greg Land, so I think it'll be a terrific read and great art to look at. And they've kind of been setting some of this up recently over in, I think it was Peter David's Spider-Man 2099 series. So Peter David is kind of weaving stuff across his various titles, and frankly, he's just a really talented writer, and it's well worth checking out. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Again, this is part of the War Zones, part of Secret Wars. It is a comic book page pick of the month, so we've got a discount at DCBS of 50%, putting it at $1.99 versus the $3.99 cover price. So I think it's worth checking out once again. That's Future Imperfect number 1 on page 52 of the Marvel Previews. Check it out.
Hey, this is Brawlinator again, and my next pick from the Marvel Previews catalog is Groot number 1. During Secret Wars, Rocket Raccoon is canceled and replaced by Groot, but don't worry, at the helm is comics rising star Jeff Loveness, a writer for Jimmy Kimmel Live, along with Marvel newcomer Brian Kessinger, who's been working with Disney Animation. In this tale, it's not all fun and games. For the first time in years, Groot gets separated from his pal and translator, Rocket Raccoon, and is forced to make it on his own in the galaxy. Armed with only the words I am and Groot, he's about to embark on a very new adventure. This should be about as much fun as the Rocket Raccoon series, if not more so, as Groot takes on an epic galactic road trip of cosmic proportions. We can expect explosions, intergalactic hitchhiking, aliens, and even space sharks, from what I'm told. I've seen some of the preview pages, and this looks like a lot of fun, with whimsical and weird visuals. 25 pages of I Am Groot? Sign me up. This is, at its heart, a story about a giant space tree who's best friends with a raccoon trying to overcome a handicap, his limited vocabulary, and his ominous appearance. I'm really looking forward to Groot. You can find out more about it on page 82 of the Marvel Previews catalog. Now, for my final pick in the Marvel Previews catalog, you got to go all the way back to page 133, or if you're like me, you're looking at a PDF that you downloaded from the internet, and it's nearly at the end. I think it's page 134 or something on there, but it says 133. It's Werewolf by Night's Omnibus hardcover. Jack Russell, a.k.a. Werewolf by Night, first appeared in Marvel Spotlight number 2 way back in February 1972. I think I was 3 years old. It was based on an idea by Roy Thomas, and the creative team was Jerry Conway and Mike Ploog. After two more additional appearances in Marvel Spotlights 3 and 4, he got his own eponymous series in September of 72 and went on for 43 issues until March 1977. The early 70s was the heyday for this genre, with books like Tomb of Dracula, The Monster of Frankenstein, Man-Thing, Ghost Rider, Son of Satan, and our featured character, of course, Werewolf by Night. They were all getting a chance at their own comic series back in the day. Mike Ploog had a definitive and idiosyncratic style, very retro even for the 70s era. It was also very energetic and cinematic, and Jerry Conway was stuck with a dead-end plot to be certain, almost compare it to the Dark Shadow soap opera drama. But that art, especially the covers, always drew me in. Don Perlin's art, not so much. But these stories are all very briskly paced, with Jack Russell, yes, as in the terrier dog breed, playing a typical 70s young man tortured by this dark secret that he's cursed with lycanthropy, or werewolfism, or whatever else you might refer to it. Basically, he turns into a werewolf at a certain cycle of the moon. Now, this trope works much better here than it did in Ghost Rider, although eventually I began to wonder why Jack Russell apparently never invested in a lunar calendar, because the moon cycle always seemed to catch him by surprise, surprise. The 70s. It was a different era. Later, more modern takes on Jack Russell really left me wanting and never gained any sort of prominence. But these original tales were really something special, and a lot of the art was something to behold. Most of these tales, as you will read, were written in the first person from Jack's perspective, looking back on these horrors. Also of note, Werewolf by Night was the very first horror comic published under the Comics Code. That doesn't make it any better or worse, I just thought it was historically significant. This collection includes Marvel Spotlight 2, 3, and 4, and of course Werewolf by Night, the main series, all 43 issues, Marvel Team Up number 12, Tomb of Dracula number 18, Giant Size Creatures number 1, Giant Size Werewolf 2, 3, 4, and 5, Marvel Premiere 28, and Material from Monsters Unleashed 6 and 7. That's nearly 53 comics in this huge beast of 1,176 full-color pages. Now, this may not be for everyone, either for the price point, or you just don't get into monster books, or you really don't want books that are this heavy, but trust me when I say these stories were fun and very emblematic of Marvel Comics in the early to mid-70s, and this one will be well worth the investment. Find out more on page 133 of this month's Marvel Previews catalog.
This is Derek from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and my next pick of the month is in the back half of the catalog, and you'll find these on pages 259 and 260. They're in the Alternative Comics section. Now, a couple of months ago, Alternative Comics announced that they would be distributing the comics from several other micro-publishers, publishers such as Study Group Comics, Revival House Press, Hickok Publications, Hangday Editions, and Manx Media. And what that does is it really opens up Alternative Comics offerings and what they're able to solicit every month in previews. So over the past 2 months, we've seen, relatively speaking, kind of an explosion of solicits, at least compared to what Alternative Comics used to offer occasionally. So not only are they bringing us their own publications, but we also get comics from other very, very smaller publishers as well. So, for instance, on page 259, we find an Alternative Comics publication, issue number 2 of Death in Oaxaca. And I read the first issue of that, and I'm definitely on board for this number 2 issue. This is by Steve Lafler. But you also find solicited some of these other comics from the publishers that I mentioned. So, for instance, also on page 259, you find the Hickok Illustrated Journal of Humor, Volume 1, which is comics from the United States. And then if you turn the page on 260, you'll find some of these other micro comics as well. So, issue number 2 of Feral Dalrymple's It Will All Hurt, and then Lauren Barnett's Me Likes You Very Much. Yeah. So you find a variety of comics this month in the Alternative Comics section, and you can check them out by looking at pages 259 and 260 of the catalog and see what's going on in the world of indie and alternative comics.
Hey guys, my next selection is on page 266 in the Andrews McMeel section. It is WUMO, Something is Wrong, trade paperback, with writing by Mikhail Wolf and art by Anders Morgenthaler. This is, I guess, the first collection of WUMO, which is kind of a hit European comic strip, and it's basically it celebrates life's absurdity and bittersweet ironies, holding up a funhouse mirror to our modern world and those who live in it. It says it is reminiscent of their countryman Hans Christian Andersen, if Andersen's fairy tales had been populated by sadistic pandas, disgruntled office workers, crazy beavers, Albert Einstein, Snoop Dogg, and Darth Vader. So it sounds like a pretty crazy comic that basically makes fun of the modern world and, you know, what we have to deal with to get by. So it just looks like something new and something interesting, and it looks like it's pretty popular. And it's, you know, a 148-page hardcover that's $15. So that's pretty reasonable. And I'm a big comic strip kind of guy. I do like to read them pretty consistently, and this is one I wasn't aware of. So if you're a WUMO fan or if you're looking for something new, check out WUMO in the Andrews McMeel section on page 266.
Next up on page 269, is The Shield number 1 from Archie Comics, and that's The Shield, not Agents of. I actually had this as a pick a couple of months back, but apparently there have been some delays. They're resoliciting it here. I'm looking forward to it. The Shield is Archie's patriotic superhero, kind of like Captain America or whatever. And this is a new version, a female version, and part of the Black Circle line of comics. Again, I'm really looking forward to it. Was a little frustrated that it got delayed, but it's once again here in previews. It is a $3.99 cover price, and we've got a 50% discount through DCBS. Now, DCBS is also offering a Dark Circle bundle, so you can get all of that stuff for 50% off. So, once again, that's Shield number 1, or The Shield number 1, on page 269 from Archie Comics. Check it out. And next up, on page 272, in my second pick from Archie Comics, which in and of itself is kind of unusual, I haven't really gotten that much from them in the past, other than, some of the Red Circle, Dark Circle stuff, I'm actually planning on getting Archie number 1. Now, this is by Mark Waid and Fiona Staples, and really, I am just dying of curiosity to see what approach they take on this, if this reboot, relaunch, retooling, or whatever exactly it is of Archie by this creative team is going to, if it's going to work for the modern audience. If they can make this character relevant, interesting, and worth reading for the majority of us, it could be a huge hit in the direct market, and it's already a huge hit in the mass market. Now, Archie has done a lot of stuff over the last couple of years, really reinventing themselves, and now for them to reinvent their title character, this is a bold move for them, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be a lot of fun. Mark Waid is just a terrific writer of superheroes, of other stuff that he did over at Boom. He did Potter's Field. He's done, I'm trying to remember all the titles. He's done so much. But he's a writer that's just got a lot of heart and soul, somebody who I find is very relatable too. He is a comic geek and just a regular guy. And I think if he's found an approach to Archie Andrews that he thinks will work, I'm willing to bet it probably will work for me. Hopefully it'll work for the rest of you guys too. I definitely think this is worth checking out. This is, to me, a major moment for Archie Comics, and one that I definitely want to see how it plays out. And, man, the variant covers, they've got a ton of them here, enough so that DCBS actually has a bundle just of the covers. But they've got them all here on 272 and 273, and they all look really cool, and just showing different aspects of Archie the character, and really kind of literally illustrating how he could work in the modern age. So I think they've got a potential hit on their hands. I hope they do. I'm going to check it out, and I think you should too. So once again, that's Archie number 1 by Mark Waid and Fiona Staples on page 272, published by Archie Comics. One of the things I like to do when I read through previews is try to find stuff in the back half that just looks interesting, but is something you might just sail past if you're not paying attention or not digging through all of the catalog, which, you know, at a 500-plus page catalog, nearly 600 this month, it's easy to miss stuff. So this time around, one of the things I picked, because it looks very interesting, and hopefully it'll be really good, is on page 291, and it's Transference number 1. Now, this is by Black Mask Comics. I've read a few things from them before. I'm picking up We Can Never Go Home from them, but I haven't read the first issue yet. I don't think I've gotten it yet. Or maybe it's in the shipment, I just haven't gone through yet. I've also read one or two other titles from them. I'm trying to think what the titles were. It was really well done stuff, a little bit different than other things I was reading. So when I saw Transference, which is a time travel series in which people can send their consciousness back in the past to do things, and then finding out it's an elite force of special agents doing a counterterrorism operation this way, it's like, this sounds like a lot of fun. I like time travel, this is the whole super spy kind of a thing going on, the whole transfer your consciousness, not your body, that can add some good plot twists, or character moments, what have you. This just seems like a lot of fun, and like I said, I've read some stuff by this publisher before. They've got a good track record for me. I don't get everything from them. Not everything they do kind of, looks of interest to me, not to my taste or whatever. but they do a fairly good job soliciting stuff that what I have picked up has been to my liking. So I think this is going to be interesting to check out. It's DCBS has a 45% discount because it's comic book page pick of the month. And once again, that's Transference number 1 on page 291.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and my next pick of the month is in the Boom Studios section. You'll find the solicit on page 299. The Fiction, number 1 of 4. This is written by Kurt Pierce and illustrated by David Rubin. Now, in this book, you'll find you have 4 childhood friends who discover a box of strange books that, when read aloud, can transport them to the beautiful imaginary worlds described within. But when one of them goes missing, the others vow never to reveal where they've been and what they've seen. Years later, when one of the remaining kids, now an adult, also mysteriously disappears, it's up to the last two of the group to dig up their dusty books to find him and finally figure out what happened to their friend all those years ago. One of the things that intrigues me about The Fiction is that it reminds me quite a bit of one of my favorite titles from the past few years that just recently wrapped up, and that is The Unwritten. And in that one, if you remember, Mike Carey has a scenario where you have kind of a meshing, a blending, or a transference, if you will, from the written and the unwritten world, or between the written and the unwritten world, where you have characters go into works of fiction and vice versa. This sounds somewhat similar to this. And another thing about The Fiction is that the way that the solicit is written, it reminds me a little bit of a couple of other narratives. For instance, It is one, and also Jumanji, where you have characters who, as kids, take part in some kind of adventure or event, but it leaves them traumatized, and so the rest of the people who are in that group do not say anything about it, but then this comes back to haunt them later in life when they're adults. And so this seems like a really interesting premise and a mixture of various narratives that I'm familiar with that intrigues me. So I'm going to check out issue number 1 of The Fiction by Kurt Pierce and David Rubin. You can find the solicit on page 299 of the April catalog.
Kyle and Drew with Comics for Fun and Profit back again in the back half of your book. Looking at Boom Studios, we are on page 300 and 301. We are looking at Strange Fruit number 1. 1 of 4 from Boom Comics, J.G. Jones and Mark Waid writing, J.G. Jones on art, and Drew, one thing jumped up to me, man, the art on this looks awesome.
Yeah, I don't even really even care what this thing is about. I was just kind of staring at this art, and the detail is freaking phenomenal. It is amazing. Joy to behold at 20% scale, so I want this in my grubby little paws so that I can stare at it and look at it, because the art is just, it looks amazing. It looks painted. It just looks beautiful.
Yeah, and while a lot of things sometimes escape us in the back half of the book, I have been lately always stopping at Boom Studios because they have been hitting on a lot of things that I've really been enjoying, from Burning Fields to Feathers to a lot of really good things. So this looks like another one, so I'm definitely interested in picking it up. I'm going to read the solicit because it does have kind of a neat little story as well. It's 1927 in the town of Chatterley, Mississippi. Drowned by heavy rains, the Mississippi River is rising, threatening to break open not only the levees, but also the racial and social divisions of this former plantation town. A fiery messenger from the skies heralds the appearance of a being, one that will rip open the tensions of Chatterley. Savior or threat? It depends on where you stand. All the while, the waters are still rapidly rising. So, like we said, it's a 4-issue series. It's going to be $3.99, 32 pages. J.G. Jones and Mark Waid writing, illustrated awesomely by J.G. Jones. So, Comics for Fun and Profit, really excited for another Boom book. This is an advance solicit for July, so we're actually looking a month in advance for this one. So, Boom Studios, Strange Fruit, number 1.
And check us out at ComicsFunProfit.com.
Hey guys, my next selection is on page 309 in the Archaea section. This is Cursed Pirate Girl Annual Number 1, written and illustrated by Jeremy Bastion. And this is 56 pages, black and white, And it's a follow-up to the first volume of Cursed Pirate Girl, which was about 150 to 200-page graphic novel that Archaea put out, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. I'm not sure when exactly, but it was just some of the finest detailed art that I've ever seen in a great story. You know, it's the fiery cursed pirate girl and the young Apollyanna continue their search for the pirate girl's father, one of the pirate captains of the dreaded Amerta Sea. This is the first annual installment of Volume 2 of Cursed Pirate Girl. So it's... If you actually take a look on page 309, you can see how detailed the art is for this. I mean, it's like almost like a fine art. You know, it's so detailed, and you can tell that he takes so much time to do this that I can understand why Archaea doesn't want to wait for another 200 pages to come in, because it will be probably a couple of years at least. So looks like they've decided to go to these 56-page annuals so that people can get the material out a little bit more and people don't forget how amazing this stuff is. And I think in today's publishing world, with so many titles coming out and so much material being published, it's important to stay in front of your audience. And I think that's why they're going to this method. I'm all for it, because any new Cursed Pirate Girl is amazing. And they also are resoliciting the Cursed Pirate Girl Volume 1, which is one of the best books put out in the last few years, in my opinion. Just the art is amazing. The story is great. You got a plucky little heroine who is looking for her father, and you know, she doesn't let bad things that happen to her get her down. And it's just a great story, and it's one of those things where you can literally read the book and then go back to the beginning and just literally spend, and I'm being serious here, hours poring over the art. That's how fine and detailed and amazing this art is. And they have a preview at the bottom of the page with some of the art, and it doesn't do it justice because they're a little bit smaller images. But even if you're not going to get this book, check out page 309 to look at the art and see how much effort Jeremy Bastion puts into this. And it's just one of the better things that Archaea has published in the last few years. So if you're a Cursed Pirate Girl fan, check out page 309 of the Archaea section, because it's back. Yeah, guys, my next selection is on page 324 in the Conundrum Press section. This is Towerkind graphic novel with writing and art by Kat Verhoeven. It says, Towerkind is an oblique end-of-the-world story seen through the eyes of a diverse group of children in Toronto's St. James Town, neighborhood of densely populated high-rise apartments. The kid in this towerhood become aware of an impending catastrophe through a number of supernatural abilities. Originally done as a series of minis that was nominated for the Ignatz Award, they describe it as a true page-turner. So I've heard Kate Verhoeven's name discussed on various posts about up-and-coming artists to watch out for. And I know that Conundrum Press likes to, bring diverse voices to the field. And, you know, one of the things about the back half of the catalog that doesn't get a lot of play is that when you see artists that kind of break through at Image and DC and Marvel, you know, oftentimes they have a number of years before that where they're producing material that is, obscure or, what they're interested in. And it's kind of interesting to find them afterwards, but it's also really interesting for me to find the artists and their original material before they kind of are known widely in the community. So I'm looking forward to trying out Kat Verhoeven's Towerkind from Conundrum Press. And if you're interested in something different, check it out on page 324.
For my final pick in this month's previews catalog, it's in the Dynamite Entertainment section found on page 328 and 329 of the main previews catalog. It's from writer Mark Waid and art by Ronaldson Freire with a cover by Alex Ross. And there are some variations, incentive covers, of course. It's Justice Inc. The Avenger number 1. These are the tales of Richard Henry Benson the Avenger, with pallid, pale features forever deadened by a criminal act. He's the ultimate master of disguise, and he uses his skills to mete out retribution to those who would prey on the innocent. In this first tale, his nemesis is the Invisible Man. Fan favorite Mark Waid brings his personal favorite pulp hero back to comics with an all-new explosive adventure. I believe I read somewhere that Mark Waid has said that diving into this crime fighter has been a lifelong dream. The questions answered in this series will be, how does a man live his life when he has nothing to live for but justice? How does he navigate in a world of life and love and joy when his own features are frozen and stiff like putty, mirroring his cold Dead Insides. Justice Inc. is the first pulp magazine story to feature the Avenger. It was written by Paul Ernst and was published back in September of 1939 in an issue of the Avenger magazine. Mark Waid is going to expand the Justice Inc. universe of pulp titles that include Condé Nast's The Shadow and Doc Savage. Writer Paul Ernst is credited with creating many of the earliest Avenger tales and was published by Street & Smith Publications. He was writing under the pseudonym, he was a house writer, writing under the pseudonym Kenneth Robison. The Avenger appeared in numerous prose novels, radio programs, and comic books throughout the decade. Most recently in Dynamite Entertainment's 2014 revival of the Justice Inc. series, written by acclaimed author Michael Uslan and illustrated by Giovanni Timpano. Comic readers may be familiar with the Avenger, not to be confused with the Avengers, the other Avengers, or Birdman's Bird, from his appearances in DC's Justice Inc. from the 70s, a run that Dynamite is acknowledging with Alex Ross's homage cover to Joe Kubert's cover for the original. You've got to see this. It looks just like an old 20-cent DC comic cover. Take a look at some of these interesting covers and a few pages of Friere's interior art found on page 328 and 329 in the Dynamite section of this month's previews catalog. John, I just want to thank you once again for allowing me to participate in another fun episode of the Comic Book Page Preview Spotlight.
This is Derek from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and my next pick of the month is in the Drawn in Quarterly section, one of my favorites every month in the catalog. Specifically, I'm on page 351. Showa, A History of Japan, Volume 4, 1953 through 1989. This is by Shigeru Mizuki. Now, if you're a fan of Mizuki, you know that over the past couple of years, Drawn in Quarterly has been publishing in translation the previous three volumes of Showa. And now we have coming up pretty darn soon the fourth volume that will be coming out. Now, the final volume picks up in the wake of Japan's utter defeat in World War II as a country reduced to rubble struggles to rise again. A former enemy becomes their greatest ally as the U.S. funnels money, jobs, and opportunity into Japan, hoping to establish the country as a bulwark against Soviet communist expansion. Japan reinvents itself, emerging as an economic powerhouse. Events like the Tokyo Olympiad and the World's Fair introduce a new, friendly Japan to the world. But this period of peace and plenty conceals a populace still struggling to come to terms with the devastation of World War II. And as Drawn in Quarterly usually does every month, every time they showcase an upcoming title, they like to re-solicit other books from the same creator in that month's previews. And so you do find the previous volumes of Showa re-solicited. Volume 1 goes from 1926 to 39, Volume 2 from 1939 to 1944, and then Volume 3 from 1944 to 1953. So you can't go wrong by checking out these books. I think Mizuki is one of the manga legends. And speaking of manga, this is Manga Month in the previews catalog, and throughout you will see highlights of a variety of different manga and manga-related titles, and the latest volume of Showa, A History of Japan, is just one of them. So if you're like me and you're trying to catch up on your manga, you can't go wrong this month. Definitely check out, though, the Drawn in Quarterly section, because not only will you find Showa, A History of Japan, Volume 4, but a slew of other manga. And Drawn in Quarterly is really good at publishing manga, really good quality stuff. So check them out on page 351 of the catalog.
My next pick is on page 358 in the first second section. This is Mike's Place, A True Story of Love, Blues, and Terror in Tel Aviv graphic novel, writing by Jack Baxter, Joshua Fadem, and art by Corin Shadmi. And this is a story about a bombing at a very popular Tel Aviv kind of restaurant slash night place where people would get together, you know, all faiths, Jews, Christians, Muslims. And it kind of is a, you know, a nonfiction accounting of the people that were there when it happened and the regulars and what happened. And, you know, it's a 192-page black and white hardcover. And, you know, it's obviously a pretty intense topic. And I just have grown to trust for a second in the presentation of their material And, you know, I really do like nonfiction comics. I think the work of Joe Sacco kind of really brought me around to how powerful they can be, especially in war-torn areas. You know, comics have a real ability to kind of show you the realities of on the ground of what's going on in areas where there's a lot of conflict. And obviously, in the Israel-Palestine situation, there's a lot of conflict, and it's ripe for comic storytelling. So if you're interested in some nonfiction comics and you, like me, really enjoy first, second stuff, check out Mike's Place, A True Story of Love, Blues, and Terror in Tel Aviv on page 358.
This is Derek from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and right now I'm in the Fantagraphic section. It's another one of my favorites every month in the previews catalog. And what I want to do is to highlight not just one particular title in the Fantagraphic section, but just to talk about the section as a whole, because Fantagraphics, much like Dorn and Corley, presents so many great things every month. And I am on pages 360 and 361, which is where you will find the Fantagraphic section. And they have great titles. So, for instance, Jeremy Baum's Dorfler, Deshu Ma's Leaf, Leslie Stein's Bright-Eyed at Midnight. But there are a couple of titles that really do get my attention. So, for instance, on page 360, you will find Lee Hayes's Not Funny Haha, A Handbook for Something Hard. Now, what does that title refer to? Well, if you look at the solicit, you'll find out. It's a bold, wry depiction of two very different young women undergoing abortions. It follows them choosing a clinic, reaching out to friends and partners, and eventually the procedure itself. Although the subject matter is heavy, the illustrations are light as the author resists pushing her personal opinion, simply laying out the facts and the emotional repercussions that often occur. Now, this sounds fascinating. You know, there are plenty of comics out there that are more memoir-like, that are very personal in this sense. But this strikes me as something that is quite a bit more personal than you usually find. So I'm definitely going to get this because I'm curious to see how Hayes deals with his subject matter. Now, on the facing page, 361, there are a couple of new works that are definitely worth noting. Now, if you listen to John's preview shows, you know that I'm a big fan of the Hernandez brothers. Everything they do, I get. I do scholarship. I do writing on the Hernandez brothers. And so anytime a new Hernandez brothers comics comes out, I'm on top of it. Now, Gilbert has a new one coming out. This is issue number one of Blubber. Now, what is this? It's an all-new standalone one-shot comic book from one of our greatest living cartoonists. Christmas has come early, the solicit reads, featuring six mostly wordless, thoroughly surreal adventures featuring a cast of misfits, monsters, and anthropomorphs that could only spring from the id of the great Gilbert Hernandez, last year's Eisner Award winner for Best Short Story. Now, it's worth mentioning that when Gilbert won the award, the Eisner Award last year, it was for a short story that appeared in his Levin Rockets New Stories collection. And the story that won the award was something very much like you will, I guess, find in Blubber, a mostly wordless, kind of surreal, more experimental short piece of fiction. And Gilbert does a lot of that. Personally, I'm much more drawn to his Palomar stories or his more realistic narrative, especially as they deal with Luba and her family and the people surrounding her and the Palomar history. Sometimes his experimental work can, as fascinated as can be, can really get out there. And I think when I interviewed, my colleague and I on the Comics Alternative interviewed Gilbert Hernandez last year, he said that he was a little surprised that that surreal experimental story won the Eisner Award. He thought that if anything of his won, maybe it would be something a little less surreal. But I guess in Blubber, you're going to get more of the surreal, so I'm definitely going to check this out. Now, right next to that is another solicit, and this is Demons and Angels, The Mythology of S. Clay Wilson, Volume 2. This is the second of a three-volume series reprinting pioneering underground cartoonist S. K. Wilson's best comics and chronicling his life in a series of prose chapters. Diamonds and Angels features his two solo comics, 2 and 22, strips from Cocaine Comics, Knockabout, Winnie Smut, and all his stories from Zap Comics, 6 through 11. Strips from obscure magazines, are also included, as well as many never-published privately commissioned watercolors and paintings. Fantagraphics has been doing this for the past several months, and that is coming out with collections or at least reprints of legendary underground comics and underground comics creators. So now we have the second volume coming out of S. Clay Wilson's work, and you definitely should check it out, especially if you're not familiar with the underground comics movement of the 1960s and 70s, but want to find out more. But in general, you cannot go wrong with Fantagraphics. Every month they have great stuff, and you can find their solicits in the April catalog on pages 360 and 361. Check them out and enjoy.
Hey guys, TJ here with my last pick of the month. It's in the Titan section, and it's on page 410. It is Universal War One graphic novel, writing and art by Janice Bahram. It's described as the whole world is at war, and it's about to get worse. 2058. Humanity has colonized our entire solar system. In the middle of a civil war between the core planets and distant outlying planetary settlements, an immense black wall appears, cutting our solar system in two. The black wall absorbs all light and matter and is up to a band of disgraced soldiers to investigate the phenomenon. So this is kind of a complete story, which is what I'm really looking for most of the times in my OGNs. And it's a hardcover, 8.5 by 11, 288 pages. And I'm a pretty big fan of Titans hardcovers. They do a good job of putting them together. And it just looks like an interesting story. And they actually have on page, not sure actually doesn't have a page number, but Titan has a kind of big page spread for this book. And they have some of the art. And it looks actually gorgeous art-wise with some interesting layouts. So this looks good, kind of like a science fiction adventure story. All in one, that's kind of what I'm looking for, beginning, middle, and an end. So if you're interested in a good science fiction story, check out page 410 of the Titan Comics section for Universe War One.
This is Derek once again from the Comics Alternative Podcast, and my last pick of the month, this being manga month in the catalog, is appropriately enough in the Viz Media section, and I'm on page 427. The book is Fragments of Horror by the great Junji Ito. Now, if you're a fan of Ito's, as I am, you know that his works Gyo and Uzumaki are really scary stuff. I recommend that you don't read them in a room alone late at night when you're a little worked up. They're very, very creepy, and we have more creepiness coming from Ito here. An old wooden mansion that turns on its inhabitants. A dissection class with a most unusual suspect. A funeral where the dead are definitely not laid to rest. Ranging from the terrifying to the comedic, from the erotic to the loathsome, these stories showcase Junji Ito's long-awaited return to the world of horror. It's a perfect book not only for true fans of the horror genre, you know, in film, fiction, and comics, but also for any reader who appreciates works of twisted genius and gruesomely gorgeous art. And that's definitely what you have in Ito's work. And I think that sums it up best. Gruesomely gorgeous art. Very detailed. It's a kind of manga that doesn't seem to get near as much attention as the more popular stuff like, let's say, Sailor Moon or Fruits Baskets, you know, the stuff that my daughter reads. In fact, I have let my daughter read Junji Ito's comics, and she eats them up. They scare her, but she loves them. So if you want that same experience, especially this being manga month in the catalog, then go to the Viz Media section, page 427, and look at the page-long description with sample art of Junji Ito's Fragments of Horror. You'll enjoy it. You'll thank me later. And if you want to thank me later, you can do so by heading over to the Comics Alternative.
So we had a great turnout on clips this time around, so thanks everybody who sent in clips. So Chris, the guys over at Comics for Fun and Profit, Derek, Ian, Jason, and TJ, you guys had a lot of great things to say and point out this time around, so thank you very much for sending it in. Once again, we've got an open submission policy. These episodes really, you know, they depend on clips being sent in by people like you. So if you're listening, when you see the solicits going up on some of the websites, send in clips as soon as that can happen, or wait for the previews to come. Now, in future months, specifically the June and July time frame. I am going to need to move up the deadline, so the deadline's going to come like right on the heels of previews coming out. And I know that's going to be inconvenient, but it's pretty much going to have to be that way because I'm doing some traveling this summer and actually taking definitely the longest vacation I've done since I started the podcast. So the orders for this previews that we just covered here are due at comic shops, I believe, around the 18th or so. Obviously, if you shop at a local store, talk to the manager, the clerk there, whatever. Find out when they need to know for the orders, the pre-orders, to do them the most good. Work with them. You know, the shops need the time, and the more information you give them, particularly as Secret Wars is starting up, with Convergence going on and stuff, I'm sure they would greatly appreciate knowing what you're interested in, so they can have the right things on their shelves and not invest in stuff that won't do them any good. If you're shopping through DCBS like I am, the order form is due on April 22nd. That's a Wednesday. Previews, the next previews, is going to be out the following Wednesday, April 29th. That means our deadline is not that Saturday, but the following one of May 9th. So in May, we're sticking to the regular schedule, but again, in June and July, I'm going to have to be bringing that forward to where the deadline is going to be the Saturday right after previews. So be thinking ahead a little if you can. For those months, I will try to do what I can about putting stuff up on the forum as to where the solicits are and stuff. I may need some help on that too. Again, part of why I'm going to be moving up the deadline in those months is because I'll be traveling and offline. So this has been a really busy week for me. I had some major stuff going on outside of the podcast and whatnot. So I've barely scratched the surface of previews. I need to do a deep dive through it. As it stands right now, I think I'm getting about 7 items from Dark Horse, about 58 from DC, 12 from IDW, 24 from Image, 70 from Marvel, and about 30 from the back half. There are a number of things, probably a dozen or two items that are on the, maybe I'll add this to the order, maybe I won't. A lot of those more towards the back half of previews than anywhere else, just because it's where the most kind of things I need to do a little more research, that's where they tend to be. So right around 201 items, and my order is totaling up to $527.27. That's going to fluctuate a bit as I determine, you know, do I want to get the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 declassified slipcase hardcover or not? That might crank it up. And then also there are some of the bundles and stuff that, since I just got the order form while I was working on this episode, I haven't had time to go through and kind of flip some stuff over to that. But I find when they do that and I can take advantage of some of those bundles, that saves me an additional 10% on, you know, the majority of the items that are in that bundle. Because usually there's one or two things they may have already had at the 50% or whatever. But it's well worth going through the order form, the Excel spreadsheet, and doing that. If you do it online, I'm sure there's a way to do it, but I don't do it online, so I really can't steer you in the right direction there. If somebody knows, please post on the forum, because again, those bundles they do at DCBS are just a great way to save some money. And also, a great way to find out about similar things to what you're liking, because they tend to group likes with likes. Go figure. So with all of that having been said, hopefully you guys found some good stuff in previews this time around. I think there's a ton of stuff, everything from a dozen or two new titles over at DC, that new Archie stuff. There's just a ton of new things coming out each and every month, and I think right now with DC, you know, flipping over a bunch of titles and getting some new stuff out there, Archie making some bold moves, Marvel starting to do some stuff with Secret Wars, and then going to be doing some more stuff after Secret Wars, it's really hard to keep track of what I'm reading and stuff. I imagine it is for the rest of you all also. So please send in clips every month. That's what keeps these episodes going. They're fun to do. Again, I find out about new things that way, and the more I'm reading, the more likely I am to review a given book or something. If I'm not reading it, I'm probably not going to review it, unless Drew talks me into it, which he's been known to do. But anyways, if there's stuff you like and you think other people will too, whether you think I'll like it or not, maybe I'll hate it, but other listeners will love it, send that stuff in. Matter of fact, I love it when people send that stuff in, because that way the episode covers stuff that's not just to my taste, but things that I wouldn't even think to mention. Once again, open submission policy. The next deadline for this is going to be May 9th. If you have any questions on where to find solicits online, how to record a clip or anything of the sort, please post on the forum and we'll get you all sorted out. So, like I said, hopefully you found some good stuff to read. Enjoy!
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.